Golf Smarter number 79 for June 19, 2007.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
The return of the Clear Key system with Carrie Mumford.
This is Golf Smarter. Each week, we tap the minds of PGA and USGA course pros, architects, authors, and teaching gurus to provide you with tips, drills, insights, and advice so that you can lower your scores. Golf Smarter is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf, golf's most trusted retailer since 1968. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome and thank you for listening to the Golf Smarter podcast. We appreciate that you download and listen to this program, but mostly I'd like to thank you for participating in our contest drawings and sending me your reviews, comments, suggestions, quotes, and criticisms. I really do appreciate that because it's your feedback that drives me to do a better job than I did last episode. Kind of like how we play golf. You just want to do one stroke better than last time, isn't it? Today's show, Kenny Nicholson joins us for a discussion about the U.S. Open and answers a question about purchasing a set of hybrids. The Golf Smarter podcast is brought to you in part by the Bird Golf Academy, Ultimate Instruction, and a phenomenal asset that you get with the Bird Golf Academy that you don't get anywhere else is a profile done by Carrie Mumford. Hello, Carrie.
How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Thanks for joining us again. It's great to have you back because we've received a lot of email asking about things that you talked about in the last episode that we discussed. So let's do it again. And let's start with this personality profile. You don't even like to call it a personality profile, I know.
It really isn't. It isn't that. I think that is the common name that most people apply to it, but I try to distinguish because there's a difference between personality and behavior style, and what I'm dealing with is style because that's got genetic input into how you came by it. In other words, you come into this world equipped with some material. You don't come in as a blank piece of paper the way people thought for a long time, and so there is still the element of natural nature and nurture. You'll hear that discussion often, but I'm dealing with the nature end of it when I'm profiling people for golf, because when you're engaged in a solitary activity, something that's self-initiated, self-contained, and you're it's self-managed, etc., you need to be relying on things that you own, not things that you have borrowed or stolen.
Let's talk about how the Bird Golf Academy uses this service from you and why it's so distinctive among other golf schools out there. No one else tries to get information about your learning style like the Bird Golf does. Why does that help an individual golfer? What's the benefit for them to have you do this profile?
Well, there's more. It's multiple in a way. See, the by the instructor having access to the style, to the behavior style, they're also teaching styles. Okay, the average teacher will teach by his own style. What we teach our instructors to do is pace the style of the learner. So that I may have to modify my style a little bit depending on the student in front of me in order to relate to that person and communicate adequately with him and understand where he's coming from so that I can help him build a game around his style, not around the teacher's style.
So it's sorry, I was going to say it's not really the technique or the method, the way you swing the club or hit the ball. That's not what we're talking about.
Right, no. There are some factors there, however. For instance, drivers, there are four styles, okay? I refer to them as they're probably fairly well known today as compared to 20 years ago, and they may carry different names for the four styles, but basically I call them driver, which is the high dominant person, the person who is bottom line oriented, that kind of thing. Then there's the persuader, who is an extrovert and a people oriented person. And then there's the craftsman who is more on the introverted side or the low responsive side, who is has a balance between task and people issues. The difference between persuader and craftsman: the persuader will talk to anybody and everybody all the time. The craftsman will be selective about who he stops and talks with, and then at a party, for instance, persuader will talk to everybody, and a craftsman will find one or two people he wants to share some time with and spend it with them. Then the analyzer is very low responsive, and the analyzer is very detailed and very perfectionistic and aims to do everything correctly. Okay, so the driver is the guy who thinks things up. The persuader is the person who promotes the things the driver thought up. The craftsman is the guy that gets the work done, and the analyzer is the quality control guy. Now, we all have a little bit of all four of those in us, but we also have at least one of them. Sometimes it's a double, but usually one that is the distinct leader. And most of what people observe in you and me will come from the one that is the leader. The others will condition the way that appears, okay? Now, there are distinctive ways that people learn, and drivers, persuaders, craftsmen, and analyzers learn differently. So drivers, persuaders, craftsmen, and analyzers teach differently. If I've got an analyzer trying to teach a driver, you're going to see sparks fly, and vice versa. If I've got a craftsman trying to work with a persuader, that's going to bring some sparks out too, and or an analyzer working with a persuader for sure going to bring sparks, because the analyzer is into get it right, and the persuaders jump all over the block. They're darting around so much, the analyzers are saying, "Well, you stand still so we can get this thing figured out."
Well, I can see in any office place that you'll have the distinct personalities like that,
or right,
the styles of who
right.
does what and what position they're in, you know, whether you're in the production side or the sales side or the management side. I can
sure.
see all those coming through. So in the profile that you did for me before I came down to Bird Golf Academy, it said that my primary traits are that of a persuader and mild secondary trait of a driver. So
yes,
we can see how this works in the workforce. What does it have to do with golf?
Well, it has the effect of, well, let me back up a second. For golf, what it does is it allows the person to know when they are in their style and when they're out of their style. If you've heard the expression, I have trouble getting my game from the practice tee to the golf course, right? Okay, what happens with people is that they go to the practice tee and they practice in a style that either they have imagined that they want or they intend to be, or they, in other words, if they don't practice in the style Mother Nature gave them, when they go to the golf course, they're going to hit that style and they're not going to be able to find what they were working on the practice range. In other words, if I'm a persuader and I'm over there on the practice range trying to be very detailed in the way I go about my game and being very precise and thinking a lot about the mechanics of the game, when I go to the golf course, that's not going to be available to me, because I'm going to be out there playing like a persuader, and I will be at a loss to know where I am or what I'm doing. So it has orientation in it. You've got to be well oriented to play the game of golf, believe me.
Absolutely.
And most people are playing it without orientation. Now, you don't notice it so much in tour players, because their disorientations are, fortunately, a little bit infrequent. But you see them do it. You see them do weird stuff, and nobody pauses over that to say, "I wonder why they did that."
No, they call that eccentric, don't they?
Yeah, well, usually somebody will say, "Well, he choked." Well, that may or may not be a choke. That may to understand whether it's a choke or not, you got to know something about behavior styles. I'll give you one. Phil Mickelson wins tournaments when he plays like the craftsman that is his lead style. When he tries to play like the persuader he'd like to be, he can't finish.
Interesting.
It's all over the place.
Interesting.
When he settled down and played like the craftsman that he is, he won the Masters. This tournament that he just came off of, Players, he won that playing like a craftsman. He wasn't playing in that last round like a persuader.
So he was true to himself.
Say what?
You were saying he's true to himself at that point.
At that point, yes, but I will guarantee you that Phil doesn't know what we're talking about.
Maybe he's listening.
He may fall into it and get it occasionally, but I mean, you know, he wanders into it, and of course he's highly skilled. Let's face it, a lot of these guys are way skilled beyond anything that you and I might look at for ourselves. And that's fine. That's wonderful. And people can play golf without having all this information that we're talking about. But if you want to get to a higher level and play stressless golf, I'll give you an illustration, okay? Because people don't understand their styles. Guess what? The last four holes in any round of golf, and I watched this for about 3 years, at every level of the game, the last four holes, 15, 16, 17, and 18, are the poorest scored holes across the board. Why? And people will say, well, that's when they're getting down to the end, they choke. And I said, no, it isn't. They flat run out of gas by the time they get there for two reasons. One, they didn't understand their style, and two, they don't understand how to play on automatic. Because if you play on automatic, you will not run out of gas.
Nothing to do with...
If you understand your style, you will play with much less stress, and stress is the energy eater. Stress will absolutely... It'll go faster out of your personal gas tank than gas is going out of our gas tanks these days with the price of it.
Absolutely true. That's really an interesting point. I always thought it had something to do with nutrition.
Well, nutrition is an energy builder, right?
Yeah.
I'm not using as much energy. I don't need as much nutrition.
There you go.
We got that. I always said it this way, Fred. If we could put restore your energy by resting. That's what we do at night. Your energy is self-contained. It comes in its own storage battery, and it comes with the territory just like your style does. Okay. The deal is, once that energy is gone, so are you. All right. And you can't add to that energy package. You can't. We used to tell people, okay, you've had a hard day. Go out and you've been sitting at a desk, go out and run a little bit. What we thought we were doing was relieving their stress. No, we were just adding to it, because it doesn't make any difference where it's coming from. It can come from mind, it can come from emotion, it can come from physical activity, it can come from a whole lot of different angles, and you don't make up for one part of it by adding some from the other part. You add to the overload, okay? So what we found we had to do was teach people how to manage themselves better. Well, you can't manage yourself well unless you understand your style.
So how do we reduce that stress on those last four holes?
How do we reduce it?
Yeah, well, I mean, or control it or manage it.
The way the stress factors work is this. If you are under pressure, you're going to use more energy than you will use if you are not under pressure. So the way guys go out and play golf, they don't have anything to defend themselves against the pressure, unless they'll play with my automatic principle and a clear key. Then they've got something to reduce the stress. I guarantee you that I turn my immune system on roughly 80 times less in a round of golf than the average golfer. So I'm not using as much energy as they are using. Obviously, we're all using some energy when we're out there playing, but what we don't want to do is use excessive energy.
Right.
If you follow that point.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I do.
Now, to restore that energy, all I got to do is rest. A lot of people have heard of the 5-minute power nap, right?
Yep.
Okay. What I've said many times is, okay, let's put a cot by the 14th, 15th tee, let everybody take a 5-minute power nap, and they'll all finish strong.
Oh, if you would make people take a 5-minute power nap, they're going to put a snack stand there. They'll see that 5 minutes of making money.
What some people are doing is using energy bars or things like that, which will give you a spike for a moment, but that's only at the physical level. That's not necessarily at the mental or emotional level. So you could spike yourself physically and still not be ready to play the next shot.
So are there bad habits that we're practicing on the golf course that can be changed?
In what respect do you mean? Like, if somebody has a bad habit, can it be changed?
Well, in the stress aspect of things and the energy expanded.
Well, a lot of that happens with understanding. In other words, when a person understands how these things work, they tend to be more receiving of them. They tend to be less punitive toward whatever the idea is. So one way is to understand the basics, how they work, and to be able to communicate with yourself better. That's one of the basics. And knowing that that I can use the automatic principle to conserve my energy, that's a help. Now I've got to learn how to use the automatic principle, how to apply it, and that comes with the tool which we call Clear Key. But those are bits and pieces of the part of the thing. Now, if you've got bad habits out there, either of the mental kind or the emotional kind, those can be resolved. Yes, for instance, I'll have people come in and say, "How do I deal with my anger out there on the course?" And I say, "Well, tell me how you've been doing it." And say, "Well, I get out there and something goes wrong, and I slam a club down, and I'm mad, you know. And I can't. Well, how do I stop that?" I said, "Well, you can't stop it once it starts out on the golf course. What you've got to do is sit down with yourself, and when there's no pressure, when you're not at the golf course, when you're in your easy chair at home and nobody else is around, and there you make a covenant with yourself that the next time you have something happen on the golf course that you don't like, that you will quietly in your head cuss it as much as you want to for 30 seconds, and then you're going to blow it off." And I said, they say, "What do you mean covenant?" And I said, "Well, covenant is about 10 degrees stronger than a promise. You can break a promise, but if you make a covenant with yourself, you're not apt to break that, or not nearly as apt to." So most people that have used that principle have done very well with it. The reason being, now you have put yourself in charge of the emotion rather than waiting until the emotion overcomes you.
I've heard people talk about how Tiger Woods is able to control his emotion if something goes wrong, that he'll spend 10 seconds on being very angry and then just be done with it.
Yep, I sort of see that in him. I've never had any occasion to talk with him about it, but you see, he's got that wonderful mix of Eastern and Western learning from his mother and his dad, okay? And the Eastern part of it is much more quiet mentally than the Western part. We are not, our Western culture is not a quiet culture at all.
No.
It is a noisy emotional culture.
Yes. And we tell our children, emotions are good. Show your emotions. Don't hold them in.
Well, except that's better advice than holding them in. But we need to help them learn the management, the self management that goes with that. And here again, that's another one of those things that needs the style information in order to do the best job of it.
You've worked with so many different players on so many different levels, from the pros to the amateurs. I loved spending the time out on the driving range with you. But what is it that you see is the major difference that sets the pros apart from the rest of golfers, the touring pros?
The main thing I see is that they have two things going, or maybe three, that the average person who goes and plays golf does not have. One is time to put into working on their games. They have access to resources that most people don't think is important for them to do what they want to do with the game, like most amateurs, for instance. The pro also is typically blessed with a higher level of skill than the rest of us, okay? So they've got resources to start with. I mean, I have seen an occasional person who would say, "Well, I've never had a golf club in my hand. I'm 20 years old right now, and I'm going to go out and learn how to play golf, and I'm going on a tour." Well, that might happen one time out of 10, 20, 30,000, but it's not going to happen every day. So there are definitely some separations where the level of ability and skill, the natural ability that comes with the person, is definitely in play, okay? And some people are so far superior there that they're the ones that we wind up calling the naturals.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot of it's got to do with resources, and then the rest of it's got to do with the willingness and the commitment to apply oneself.
And that's really what I was driving at. I mean, the physical attributes are obvious. What about the mental and emotional attributes that the touring pros bring to the table that we don't have the ability?
You've got a mixed bag there in a way, because, see, and this one's harder to talk about, Fred, because typically we don't have access to what happened to most of these people in the first 3 years of their lives, okay? And those are the particularly critical formative years, which we don't get to see very much of unless we get them into a therapy room and go into some pretty deep counseling techniques. The first year of life is given to nothing in the world by any human being but learning about trust. And it's trust versus mistrust. So some people get heavy on the mistrust side. They're not going to do as well out there, no matter how their talent level is. Some are a little heavy on the trust side. If they get too heavy, they're not going to do as well either. So the well-balanced person who learned it with a balance between the trust and the mistrust factors is probably going to be the person who excels there. Okay. Then the second and third years of life are given to who's going to control my life, me or those around me? And there you get another differential, okay? Because some people get too much control, and some people don't get enough control. And so the ones that get too much control are the ones running around saying, "Oh, my God, find me a sports psychologist who's got a long umbilical cord because I got to stay plugged in." And the ones who are on the other side of that coin say, "I don't need anybody." So you've got those two periods of learning, and the control period has also got a lot to do with whether a player can learn to give up control in order to gain control, which is absolutely necessary in the game of golf. And some can do it, and some can't do it. Some people are out there grinding on how to make that club do exactly what they want it to do all the time they're swinging it. And those two things don't match in time frame. They don't work well together.
I would really be remiss if I didn't get to talk about your Clear Key system once again. I was absolutely amazed when you and I worked out on the driving range. You walked up to me, you introduced me to Clear Key, you gave me a brief explanation of it, and said, "Now go hit the ball," and I nailed it. Shot after shot after shot. It was mind-boggling to me how well it worked. And then, of course, over the next 3 days, Anne-Marie Pauly started working on my swing and changing it and doing lots of things, and everything went to crap. But but still, I use the Clear Key, and it's so obvious to me when I don't use it, when I just get over the ball and hit the ball, and the results. Let's talk about the Clear Key system and how effective it is for every golfer at every level and why it works.
Sure. Well, the reason it is effective is that it removes just what I was just talking about a minute ago. It removes that unevenness in the time frame. In other words, it permits you to go through the motions of your swing on your own time frame, instead of one that you are forcing into the thing by telling yourself what to do while you're doing it. See, the clear key also puts you on automatic pilot, and a lot of people think they're on automatic when they're not on automatic. And, you know, a lot of people think that they don't have to, they say, I just don't think while I'm swinging. Well, that's partly true. What they mean is they don't think consciously. Non-consciously, they don't have any way of knowing what's going on down there because that, by definition, you can't see it. So since 97% of the process is non-conscious, that means that they handle 3% of it, but they haven't handled the other 97%. So what the clear key does is puts the mind to work consciously, which then prevents the non-conscious from doing anything as long as you are thinking a thought, because Mother Nature provided us with a system that allows you to only think one thought at a time, and it doesn't make any difference whether it's conscious or non-conscious. You still can only think one thought at a time. So the clear key keeps everything quiet except that clear key, and that's the reason the clear key has to be something that does not give the body any command. It has to be passive to commands.
Does it also have to be somewhat nonsensical?
I beg your pardon? It can be nonsensical because that's not going to mislead you in any way. I mean, I know a lot of people will use foreign language expressions that they don't even understand. And, you know, like Anne-Marie, you mentioned Anne-Marie. Anne-Marie uses the one that Francis Ouimet's caddy told him to use, easy-peasy, lemon-squeezy.
Yeah.
You go back and you watch that Francis Ouimet movie,
uh-huh.
His caddy was telling him to use a clear key. They didn't call it that, but that's what he was doing.
Hmm. So explain to us, now that we know how it works, how to incorporate it on our own without getting the chance to spend time with you. Explain what it is that we want to do and how to incorporate it.
Well, of course, you can incorporate it, but the clear key needs to be there's some definitions. It'd take me much too long to help to put it on this segment. I mean, there's at least 15 or so tips that I use. They're printed out. You can get them off my website, and they tell you how to deploy the clear key. Of course, that's in my books too. But that's neither here nor there. It would take me much too long to do that. But roughly speaking, the clear key has to be long enough to start before your swing commences and last until you're in full finished position. Okay. Then it's got to be passive to instruction. You can't have any instruction in it. You've got to say it three times, once while you're walking to the ball, once while you set the club, and once while you swing the club, while you swing the club. See, a lot of people miss that point. They think you just say it up until the time you swing the club because they've been introduced to triggers, and they think this is a trigger. It's not. It's a cover. It's like the tablecloth across the top of the table. It doesn't support the dishes. It just keeps the top of the table clean.
Right.
The clear key has a lot. You can't, for instance, you can't leave any gaps in between your clear key, because if you leave a gap in there, if you say like easy peasy lemon squeezy and then stop and then start it again, easy peasy lemon, that little gap between those two sayings, your non-conscious can jump up in there and do a number on you.
Oh, it'll bite you.
Yeah, it can jump up in there and say, whoops, watch out now.
Exactly. Yeah. And you started me, let's see, the one you started me with was, if it ain't Dutch, it ain't much.
Yeah, if you ain't Dutch, you ain't much, or if it ain't Dutch, it ain't much.
Right, and that one wasn't long enough.
You can vary those, I beg your pardon?
It wasn't long enough because I guess my pace was too quick, but I mean, it didn't, I wasn't able to get it to work for me, and so I changed it to, Mary had a little lamb. I wish I had one too.
Yeah. Okay. And
that one works great for me.
Okay. And that's what you have to do. You have to find one in which the key fits the pace and rhythm of your swing. In other words, you don't try to match your swing to the key. You match the key to your swing.
Yeah, and it gets me into a rhythm that now I know that if I'm, you know, one direction or the other on my swing after that third one, if I'm going too fast with it, either whether I'm, you know, moving too fast or I'm saying it too fast.
Yeah, and then you reminded me of another thing that's very important about this little conversation. When you start using a clear key and you find out what it actually does, your confidence level escalates almost like to the power of something or another as you're going through it. Yep. It doesn't just add on, it multiplies.
Yep.
Because your confidence comes from the experience of doing what you wanted to do and what you planned to do and what you were able to bring off. And now your confidence level starts to build. Now you don't trouble yourself so much in between shots. That slows down all that burn off of energy as well. And so you're getting multiple advantages and benefits from the use of your clear key. That's all.
And confidence is critical in golf.
Oh, absolutely. And that's where I get the fire to build commitment. If I have confidence going, now I got a foundation for commitment.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Kerry, it's so great to speak to you again. Let's tell everybody you're at clearkeygolf.com. Go check out that website, learn more about it, do some investigation, find out what the 32-ball drill is, incorporate it into your practice sessions. It's going to help your game. It's going to lower your scores. It's
right.
Going to increase your confidence. I'm telling you, it's worked for me, and I'm a hacker.
Well, I tell you, the other thing that it produces is it makes golf a lot more fun because you've got time to enjoy it.
There you go. There yep. you go. Kerry Mumford, great to speak to you again. Thanks so much.
Thanks to you, Fred.
It's time to ask Kenny. Do you have a question about specific golf gear or are baffled about what to look for in a category of new golf products? Kenny Nicholson, technical specialist of EdwinWattsGolf.com, would like to help you. And if we use your question on the show, you'll receive a free Golf Smarter Edwin Watts Golf hat. To submit your question, go to golfsmarterpodcast.com and click on the button labeled Ask Kenny. Ask Kenny is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf and EdwinWattsGolf.com, golf's most trusted retailer since 1968. Kenny Nicholson, did you enjoy your Father's Day?
It was great, Fred. How about you?
I had a great time. My son and I, well, actually my family, we got to go out to the mountain play here in Marin County and see Hare. And then we came back as if it had never happened because we had TIFO'd the Open and got to see the final round at a little bit faster pace than most people because we didn't have the 6 hours. But we got to see the whole thing, and it was so much fun.
Oh, it was pretty good. I enjoyed it.
It has Father's Day, watching golf with your dad on Father's Day, or playing golf with your dad on Father's Day, has that passed baseball as, you know, an apple pie and hot dogs as the American pastime?
Yeah, I mean, if you're afforded that luxury to still have your father around, I took advantage of it. My dad
yeah,
and I watched the Open and had lunch, and my girls were with me, and just had an awesome time.
That's great.
Such a good day.
That's great.
And the golf wasn't too bad either.
The golf wasn't. You know, it's interesting because people always ask me, like, who do you want to win the Super Bowl or who do you want to win the World Series? And my answer has always seemed to be the same, which is, I really don't care. I just want it to go down to the last pitch. I want it to go to the last play. Well, this is no different. I mean, we've talked many times of, like, I'd much rather see them go 21 under over 4 days versus 5 over. Well, this was 5 over and pretty exciting.
It was.
And it went down to the last putt of the day, which is remarkable.
Yeah, it was nice. When we discussed that before, it was you know, pretty much about Augusta. I think you know the Open is going to be difficult no matter where it's played.
Yeah.
It's going to be a challenge. So I think the course was set up, you know, fair. The thing that was great to me was 17, you know, 305 yards.
Mm-hmm.
And that hole proved to be so difficult.
Right. Come on.
For the whole week.
It was such a tease. Come on, go for it.
It was, yeah.
Do it. Come on. Can you do it? And they couldn't.
Yeah, it was great. I enjoyed it. It just goes to show you. I mean, you know, a hole doesn't have to be, you know, 500-something-yard par four to make it interesting.
Right.
You know, because it was exciting. What are they going to do? They're going to hit driver, three wood. They're going to lay up. And the guys didn't back down. They went for it.
They didn't golf smarter.
Some of them didn't golf better either.
Nice plug there. That was very good for both of us. You know what I found very interesting is Tiger's baby was born. Have you read this?
It was, yeah. Born
little girl
less than
was
24
born,
hours
less,
after.
Sam Alexis Woods was born early Monday morning. And Tiger has said all along, if the baby was being born during a major, I'm out. Right?
Right.
So if he would have made a birdie on 17 or made the putt on 18, okay,
he would have had to go to a playoff on Monday.
And the playoff would have been Monday, and he would have said, sorry, I'm out.
I would have. That would have been a good one to see.
Yeah.
I would have liked to have seen it.
And Sandy Koufax said, I'm not pitching on Yom Kippur.
Yeah.
Deal with it. You know, Tiger may have said, I'm out.
Yeah. Very well could have happened. It would have been interesting to see. What
a great asterisk that would have been.
Yeah, it would have been. Yeah, it would have been something else. And I tell you what, I believe that he might have skipped the playoff. It's hard to say, but,
yeah,
you know, he's...
He's such a competitor.
He said all along, you know, if it comes down to baby or golf, he's gonna be there for the baby's delivery.
Especially to have it the day after Father's Day, which was the first Father's Day his dad wasn't. Oh man, it was just so many great stories with that.
Yeah, it was.
Have I ever told you that I almost named my puppy after Tiger's mom?
No, I've never heard that story.
I've never told you this. I got for a birthday a couple years ago. I received a puppy, and. She's great, and I wanted to give her a golf name, except she's a little dog. I mean, she's only about 14 pounds. And we already had a family member who had had a dog named Divot, so we couldn't do that, right? So we were looking for all these golf names and just couldn't come up with anything. And then finally came up with the name Lulu, and, you know, she's a star of the Good Dog podcast. But she's – so Lulu came her name, and then I had a cousin go, you know what? You should have named her after Tiger's mom. It's like, what are you talking about? He goes, don't you know Tiger's mom? Yeah. Her name's Tita. Yeah, so what? Well, with your name and her name, your dog's name would have been Tita Green.
That's pretty good.
That'd be a good golf name, wouldn't it?
It would be.
So if I ever, ever get to meet Tiger, I'm telling him my dog's name is Tita. Just don't tell anybody, but I will lie to Tiger and say, I named my dog after your mom. And the dog's name was Tita Green.
Oh, goodness.
Enough of that. Now, let's go to the mailbag. All right, Kenny, we've received a question that we'd like for you to answer. And it's actually a very good question. Letter says, I'm a 17-year-old, longtime listener. My dad and I love to listen. Oh. How appropriate on Father's Day. My question today is all about hybrid iron sets. I already have a 3 and 4 hybrid from Nicholas. I need a new set of irons and was wondering if these are for real and worth checking out. I've been doing some research, but I can't determine if a hybrid pitching wedge or sand wedge can beat a regular iron. Any help would be greatly appreciated. And that question comes from Alex Rich of St. Charles, Illinois. Alex, you will receive a hat because Kenny has an answer right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question, but there's a reason a lot of the manufacturers don't make complete sets of hybrids. They're just not that popular. They're very popular in long irons, not so popular in the short irons. Why is that? Anytime you add loft to a golf club, you add forgiveness, basically. So, you know, the majority of the golfers out there, whether it's a medium handicapper or a high handicapper, don't have a big problem hitting, you know, 7, 8, 9, especially pitch and wedge and sand wedge, because they offer, you know, a little bit bigger sole, more loft, and it's a lot more forgiving. And thus, you're only hitting the ball, you know, 150 yards or 100 yards, so the room for error is not as great as if you're hitting a long iron and you're going to hook and slice it or do whatever. So the answer is no, they're not very popular. He's 17 years old, so he's young. I would hate for him to get into a club that he's going to have to play to that club and not, you know, play to or cater to having a good swing, and, you know, good fundamentals. He shouldn't need to get an all hybrid set. I would recommend getting, you know, a couple of hybrids in your long irons and then, you know, trying to fit yourself into a golf club that is, there's tons of golf clubs out there that are very forgiving and very affordable, you know, to where you don't have to go to an all hybrid set.
And would your answer have been the same if the letter had come from a 35-year-old woman?
Probably so. Where it would differ from that is if I was going with either a senior or an older lady. that needs a lot more forgiveness or has a problem with swing speed and getting trajectory on the ball. What a hybrid's going to do is going to help you get the ball a lot higher, a lot quicker, and a lot easier. And typically you find that in somebody that has a little bit slower swing speed, so that set might benefit somebody that has a slower swing speed, not typically a 17-year-old boy trying to play the game or you know, somebody of middle age either.
Well, yeah, my next question was, what if it was a 55-year-old guy with a 18 handicap, or he's a bogey golfer?
Yeah, no.
He plays with graphite shafts.
Yeah, again, I wouldn't say that an all-hybrid set would be the answer. There's so many golf clubs out there that are forgiving, have a low center of gravity, a large sole, that are forgiving, that you don't have to go with an all-hybrid set.
Fascinating.
Everybody's different, obviously. If they weren't, we would all play the same golf clubs. So you can try them and see what you think. But the answer is they shouldn't need an all-hybrid set.
Okay. Okay, good. Well, Alex, I hope that helps. Alex, if you have any more questions about it, just please write to us. And we have been receiving questions, and of course we can't do every question every week. Unless we do an entire new podcast called Ask Kenny. Oh, what a concept.
I like that.
I don't know if your boss will go for it, but you and I will have a blast. Hey, the interview that we just completed with Carrie Mumford, Carrie's got some fascinating ideas and stuff, but he is also a daddy, correct?
That is correct.
You know this because Carrie's son, you want to fill in the blanks for us, please?
He's one of our store managers, Eric.
Eric is not just a store manager. I've talked to your boss. He's a star manager, isn't he?
Definitely is. Yeah, he's a huge asset to our company.
And which store does Edwin Watts Golf retail location does he manage?
Eric is our manager in Nashville, Tennessee.
Okay. And how many stores do you have in Nashville?
In Nashville, we have one store in Nashville right now.
Okay. So please go to the Edwin Watts if you live in Nashville or if you're going through Nashville this summer. Or you're listening to this podcast much later and you just happen to be in Nashville, go to the Nashville Edwin Watts Golf Store, stop by, say hi to Eric, tell him you heard it about on the Golf Smarter podcast, you listen to his dad, and he'll have no idea what you're talking about.
No, he will. I'm sure he's up to speed on his dad's show.
I think his dad is pretty vibrant and doesn't report on everything that he does to his kid. He is a very active man. He's remarkable. And we are giving away something as well, aren't we?
That is correct.
We're giving away that Tour Edge Bazooka J-Max 5-Wood, valued at $150. And we are accepting entries until June 25th. And the announced winner will happen on June 26th. Please go to golfsmarterpodcast.com, click on the contest button, fill out the form, fill out the verification code, and you will submit your entry. If you'd prefer to enter via email, just send your email with your name, email, of course, email address, and your mailing address to pickme@golfsmarterpodcast.com. Kenny, we will speak to you on the next episode of Golf Smarter.
Take care, Fred.
Thanks, Kenny. I appreciate it. And, you know, we've talked about the technical difficulties we've had trying to get episode 2 of the Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf podcast up on iTunes, but I'm positive that we're in the final stretch. So please, be patient with us and keep checking your iTunes directory for part 1 of our conference call with Scotty Cameron and Frank Thomas about putters, putter technology, and putting. Once these issues are all resolved, which is going to be soon, then we'll release part 2 of the putter discussion. Thanks again for your patience. Now, if you just want to listen to the show on your computer, if you haven't heard it yet, go to golfbetterpodcast.com. Golf Smarter is brought to you in part by the Bird Golf Academy. If you've considered going to a golf academy, make sure your research begins and ends with the Bird Golf Academy. Go to golfsmarterpodcast.com and click on the link to Bird Golf Academy. Join the other Golf Smarter listeners who've taken advantage of the 10% discount and ultimate instruction from the Bird Golf Academy. This week's closing quote is another little Father's Day message from Paul Kelly in North Blenheim, New York. Paul quotes Harvey Penick, who once said, "Arnold Palmer's daddy told him to hit it hard, but you're not Arnold Palmer." If you have any questions, comments, quotes, or requests, just click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarterpodcast.com.
Are more and more people being diagnosed with cancer, or does it just seem that way as we get older? When you or a parent, your spouse or your sibling, a good friend or coworker is diagnosed with cancer, it's like falling down a rabbit hole. Clinical oncologist, Dr. Robert Rodvian.
I want people to understand what a cancer doctor can offer them, what's realistic, what's unrealistic. How do you take charge of your own life, but don't start making so many decisions for yourself that, in fact, you interfere with your own care?
Each week on the Smarter Cancer Care podcast, Dr. Rodvian will shed light on what cancer patients and their loved ones need to know. From the psychological impact to managing the flow of information, he'll offer compassionate advice on how to get the best care and maintain the highest quality of life. I'm Joanne Green. Join me in conversation with Dr. Robert Rodvian for Smarter Cancer Care. Find us on iTunes or at smarterpodcasts.com.